Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
It's about to be a fun ride. Follow along, watch as we slide. Paranormal just hit the lights. Goosebumps all through the night. Mix in just a little bit of twang. That girl sure can't do a thing. Together, hillbillies go insane. Laugh so hard it'll hurt your brain. Podcast you won't ever change. These two here, they got the recipe. Sat on back and listen in to some of our darkest mysteries, eh?
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. And now here's your host, Jerry and Tracy Pauly, and their dog Ninja.
Hey, it's Kristen.
And Dakota. You're listening to Hillbilly Horror Stories.
And make sure you guys come see us in Lexington at Scarefest Rupperine at the end of September.
Alright, welcome everybody to episode 56 of Hillbilly Horror Stories.
Hey everybody, hope you guys are enjoying your weekend, your long weekend.
I'm Jerry and this is Tracy.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks for reminding me.
Trust me, that I guarantee there's some days where I do need to remind you.
I know, it's been a crazy long, busy weekend for sure already.
We got a whole bunch of good stuff to get to tonight, so we're just going to jump right into it. First of all, thanks to the military and civil servants, no matter where you are in the world. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you, and God bless you guys.
And we didn't get to this last week because we recorded the show actually a little bit early, but I'm not going to go without saying at the very beginning of this show, many prayers, positive thoughts, everything we can send out to you guys in Texas, specifically Houston. You guys have been hit hard. You guys are resilient, and you're going to end up coming through this smelling like a rose because everything's bigger in Texas, including your hearts.
That's exactly right. Texas is a tough state, and you know, we encourage anybody to send supplies, donate anything you can do to help. I know I'm just one person. I really wish I could be down there and helping people out down there. It's just very heartbreaking, but you guys are just gonna fight through this, and you know, we are all behind you.
Yep, absolutely. And if anybody wants to donate to the Red Cross, that will help them people out.
Yes,
so sure very
will.
Much. And, you know, we've got, we say this all the time, we've got a lot of listeners in Texas. We've got a lot of listeners in Houston. As a matter of fact, this past show that we just put out, which was hitting, you know, during the midst of most of the trials and tribulations you guys are having, you guys were the fifth most listened to city for Hillbilly Horror Stories. So if we were able to help any at all, to try to ease some of your minds, we were more than happy to do it.
Oh, God, bless your all's heart.
Yeah, so we love you guys, and we're thinking about you.
Yes, we are.
All right, new Patreon supporters, Brittany Phillips, Sean Stacy, Jessica Walters, Tammy Croucher. Thank you so much for your support. Hope you enjoyed your latest Listener Stories episode.
Yeah, they were awesome.
Like you guys always tell us that you enjoy the extra stuff that we do. And that's what Patreon's for. If you guys are unfamiliar and you're just listening, you can actually choose to donate some money to the show each month, either $1, $3, $5, or $10. And when you do that, you get extra episodes. Right now, there is currently 7 extra episodes. four of them are listener stories episodes where you call and talk to us and tell us your stories. So if you ever want to get on some of that in the future, even if you're not a Patreon supporter, we still want your story.
Oh, so yeah, absolutely.
Send us a message and we'll get you on a future episode. But we also have done three on the 15th of every month. We do a regular episode just like you're going to be listening to tonight. We mix a little bit of true crime, a little bit of paranormal. And those come out on the 15th, so there's three of those up. So if you sign up for Patreon now, it doesn't cost you a penny yet. They charge you the first of every month, so it gives you a chance to see what you're getting. But, you know, might as well sign up for free, give it a spin, and see what you think. All right, headphones winner. I know we didn't get to mention this because we drew for this after we had recorded last week's show. Payne Thompson won, and we've already sent his headphones out to him. Congratulations,
Payne. Yeah, congratulations.
Woo-hoo. He was up in the Cincinnati area, so cool. Let's jump into iTunes reviews real quick. We've got Melissa Sunshine 333, Future Hero, Arcatooth, that's a unique one. Medium Matters, you heard her on the show last week, mm-hmm. Chantel and Marie, thank you guys for coming on and for the review. CD Speed, Lorimer Black, The Real Britta P, that's pretty gangster. Josh 2481, Tiger Panzer 2000, Janet Rod, Tanky 8383, Cat Girl in Vermont, R. Whitesell, Racer X, and LTL in the ATL.
Nice, guys. Thank you so much. We look so forward to the reviews and stuff like that, and we can't thank you guys enough for, you know, keeping it going.
Yep, and I thought what we would do, we're going to mix stuff up every week. I thought I would start out this week with the creepy fact of the week.
Oh, cool.
So this is kind of unique, but there is an amoeba that eats brains that is found in fresh water. So, like rivers,
freshwater?
Rivers,
oh,
lakes,
you mean like rivers and that stuff. Type of, oh.
So it's not an ocean. This thing can kill a human in 7 days, and there is no effective treatment.
Nothing they can do.
Yep. So remember that next time you jump in a lake or a river, you could have an amoeba eating your brain.
Man, that's crazy.
With nothing, no help of surviving. 98% death rate if
wow.
you get this. That's kind of
strange. And that's really weird because it's like something you wouldn't even think about.
Nope.
I wouldn't think about that when I jump in a lake.
You will now. Thank you. You're welcome. Okay. Let's jump onto the stories because what we're going to do this week, it's going to be a New Orleans themed show,
mm-hmm.
which is why that you heard some House of Rising Sun. That's a good New Orleans song.
It is a great song.
And it actually comes a little more into play, even though it wasn't called The Rising Sun. We are going to be doing the story of Madame LaLaurie and
Madame.
Her mansion of death, basically.
Oh, fun.
And, you know, I figured that song, if it had just called it the LaLaurie Mansion instead of Rising Sun, it would have been perfect.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Let's jump into this thing because...
You got any beads?
I have no beads at all.
Oh.
We got some cool stuff before the show's up to tell you about that's going to be going on in our future, so we will bring that up. As of right now, we are going to jump right into the story.
Let's jump.
All right. Delphine LaLaurie. She was born Marie Delphine McCarty. How pretty is that?
Mm-hmm.
For such a horrible person. In 1780, she was born in New Orleans. She was married three times. And her first two husbands died. Wonder
why?
Actually, she didn't have anything to do with the two husbands that died.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, well, one of them was like a Spanish mm-hmm. head of the military.
Yeah.
And they decided that they wanted him to go and become, you know, take a position in the military. And then during the course of all that, he was killed.
Oh.
So it wasn't really her fault. And the other guy, I can't remember his exact situation, but he died of something too
yeah.
at a very early age, so. All right, so she married a physician by the name of Leonard Lewis LaLaurie.
Leonard Lewis LaLaurie.
Yeah, how cool is that? It's actually Leonard Lewis Nicholas LaLaurie.
Oh.
So I left part of his name out because, you know.
Yeah.
Like I'm just trying to just eat up time on the podcast. So, but she married him on June 25th of 1825. Now, in 1831, she bought some property at 1140 Royal Street in New Orleans. Now, that would eventually be where they built their mansion. Mm-hmm. They did that in 1832. Two-story mansion with an attached slave quarters.
Slave quarters?
Yeah. So remember, this is a time where most people had slaves, especially in the South. So that would have been, you know, just like adding a garage on today.
Right, right.
So she lived there with her husband and her two daughters from a previous marriage. She had four daughters, I believe, but there was only two of them living with her at the time. They were very well respected in the socialite community of New Orleans. I mean, they had all these huge parties, that everything was lavish, and when the guests were there, they really catered to the guests, so they really got everything they wanted and really did a big, you know, performance, more or less, when the people were there.
Because they were richy.
Right. Now, to a certain point, there start to be some grumblings amongst the friends and neighbors and the people in New Orleans about possible mistreatment of her slaves.
Okay.
Partly because neighbors and friends would notice that she changed slaves very often. Like, you know, the stable boy today, 3 days later, it'd be a different stable boy. Mm-hmm. And typically from these times, if you were the stable boy, you were the stable boy for long periods of time, or whatever the case was, whatever your role would have been. These people kept changing in and out, and they just thought that was kind of strange for how things happened.
Right.
But it's like, because keep in mind, slaves back in this time were looked at as property. They weren't really looked at as people. So it would be like, in a sense, if you went out and bought a car, 4 days later you got another car. No. What happened to your old car? You just traded in? Because they didn't do that back then. So when you bought a slave, it was a piece of property, and it would be unusual for them to just disappear and somebody else come on. It was said that her slaves looked haggard and wretched. That was a term that was actually used by some of the people in the area. Now, the rumors went around so much that a local attorney actually made a trip to her house and reminded her that there were laws relevant to the upkeep of slaves. You got to remember, it's a different time, and nothing that went on back then, as far as this goes, was right and should have never happened. But what they did try to do was to make sure that, almost like a prison system, that the people, the slaves, were treated humanely. So there were laws in place that if you had slaves, you were supposed to treat them with a certain level of dignity.
Well, of course.
But I'm saying but back then they had to actually have the laws in place just to keep people from not doing that. You would think something that would be common
ridiculous.
Sense.
That's so ridiculous.
But
I want to go back in time and punch a bunch of people.
Right.
That's what I want to do.
So he came to let them know that, hey, there's laws that state you've got to treat
your
slaves
like
a certain
that.
Level. They can't just run around, you know. But she was hateful. She would constantly chain her slaves up, which we'll get into more. Mm. She would beat her kids if they got caught feeding the slaves. I mean, she was just a unique woman. We're going to get
I hate her already.
We'll get into a lot more of that. One of her neighbors was actually going upstairs one day to her place.
Mm-hmm.
And she could look over into the courtyard, and she saw Madame LaLaurie actually chasing one of her slaves. It was a 12-year-old little girl by the name of Leah. Now, the story goes that Leah was combing her hair, combing Madame LaLaurie's hair, and she hit a little bit of a snag.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so outraged by it that she picked up her bullwhip and started chasing this little girl around the courtyard. She ran into the house, and then the woman just stood there and watched. And she could see them go all the way up, and the little girl got all the way to the roof with Madame LaLaurie chasing her. And the kid basically got chased right off the roof and fell to her death.
Oh.
And apparently because it would have been better to just do that than to face the punishment that she was getting ready to get.
Aww.
She apparently, according to this neighbor, was buried into a shallow grave on the property. Right there underneath of a tree.
I have a feeling I'm going to cry in this story.
She was investigated, and she was found guilty of illegal cruelty, and she was forced to forfeit 9 of her slaves. But her family went and bought most of them back and brought them right back to her.
Why would they allow them to do that? I mean, is the people back there stupid?
Apparently. Oh, she also got a fine. But, well, she also, keep in mind, she knew all the big shots in the city. I mean, that's she hobnobbed with everybody. Plus, she also received a huge fine of the amount of approximately $300. So you kill, you're responsible for the death of a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah, she didn't even
you get a slap on the wrist.
She didn't do any time or, I mean, she didn't.
Nothing. Not even.
Okay, so the hobnob, snob, buttholes, or whatever she hung with, I mean, they don't treat their slaves like that, do they?
No.
Okay, so why would they do that?
Because, once again, slaves back then were more looked at as property than people. So that brings us to April 10th, 1834. This is where everything comes to a head. Fire breaks out in the LaLaurie mansion. Police, firefighters, a group of bystanders that were just helping, they show up. They go inside. They find a 70-year-old woman chained by her foot to the stove. She later admitted that this was a suicide attempt because she knew what was going on in that house, and she did not want to get sent to the upper room where nobody seemed to ever come back.
The lady that was dumped to the stove? Lady.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
She set the house on fire just to try to end it for everybody.
Oh, my gosh.
So the people responding to the fire, they tried to get the keys from the LaLauries because they were both there. And they were like, hey, we need to get the keys so we can make sure there's nobody in the slave quarters. They refused to give them the keys. And Mr. LaLaurie, the doctor, he basically said something to the point of people that come into other people's houses and butt into where their business isn't, you know, but in other people's business should just go home and not worry about things.
Oh, as your house is burning
down. Yeah, as your house is burning down and you got slaves in a quarter.
What the hell is wrong with him?
So what they did was they go upstairs and the people that were, you know, the fire marshals and the police and all that, they go up and they kick the door in.
Because
it was bolted from the outside and was locked. And once they refused to get the keys, they kicked the door in. And being firefighters and stuff like that, they know the smell of death, we'll say, because they've experienced it. And they said that it was so horrible that some of them started throwing up on the spot.
God, this is awful. This is a terrible story.
Now is when it really gets terrible.
Oh, God.
They found 7 slaves, horribly mutilated. They were hanging from their necks. Their limbs were stretched and torn from one extremity to the other. They found bodies under the floorboard. They found bodies that were cut up. One of the people said, language is powerless in trying to give a proper conception of the horror that a scene like this must have inspired.
Oh my God.
Some of the slaves actually had a medieval collar around their neck that was made with had metal spikes that went in different directions. And it was designed that if they moved their head, they hit on a spike in some way, form, basically designed to keep them from just not even moving. If they moved at all, it was some kind of a pain. It was some kind of a torture. So they had no choice but to just hang there and just take what was given to them.
What a sick-ass bitch.
There were dozens of naked slaves in this room. Some were strapped to makeshift operating tables. Some were chained to the wall. Some were in cages that were made for pets that were so small their bodies barely fit into them. One woman, she had her stomach split open and her intestines were pulled out and wrapped around her like a belt. Another woman's mouth was sewn shut, and after later examining, she had had animal feces put into her mouth before they had sewn it shut. So I don't know what the point of that was. This was just a very sadistic, hateful woman. And it's just, I mean, there were people in there that had their eyes gouged out. Their fingernails were pulled off. Ears had been shredded. There was a man that had a hole drilled into his head with a stick actually protruding out of it, which was presumably to steer his brain.
Well, we know that lady's burning in hell, so.
Most had been dead for a long time. Unfortunately, not all of them were dead. There were slaves who had bones broken and reset in weird ways. One of them, her bones had been broken and reset in a way to where she looked like a crab. There was another woman who had her arms amputated and then some circular things cut around where the amputation was to make her look like a human caterpillar. They found a few bodies out in the yard, buried, which one of which was the 12-year-old girl. When word spread about the slaves, a mob came to the house and they pretty much destroyed everything that they had. Pianos, any type of luxuries that they had, furniture, they were just tossing them out the windows, crashing on the ground. Their whole goal was to just ruin anything that wasn't ruined by the fire.
Yeah.
The LaLaurie's actually escaped during all this.
Of course.
Of course they did. And it was said that they went to some attorneys. They signed some power of attorneys over to their son-in-laws. And that way they could still have money out of whatever they was still left of property and all that stuff. Supposedly, after they signed the attorneys, they hopped on a boat. They made their way to France. Delphine actually died December 7th, 1849 in France. But somehow or another, she had her body actually snuck back to New Orleans and buried in St. Louis Cemetery No. 1. That is a disturbing woman.
Yeah, that is. I cannot believe that they escaped. Well, so what happened to the husband?
I guess he escaped too. I mean, nobody really focused on him. It was
so
more
you
for her.
They. Oh my gosh! See, this is beyond anybody's imagination. I feel.
So let's talk about why. There are several different theories on what happened here. Why it happened. Theory one is that her and her husband, because they were both physicians. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The theory one was her and her husband were both doing medical experiments on slaves. You know, at this time, there wasn't a whole lot known about the human bodies. And this was during the time where people would actually go dig up freshly buried bodies just to be able to experiment to find out things. Doesn't make it right,
no.
But that's one theory.
Yeah.
On, once again, I'll keep going back to people didn't look at slaves, not. I'm not going to say people, but some people looked at slaves as property, not people. I don't know how you can have a living, breathing person of any kind, way, shape, or form in front of you and not view them as a person.
That just makes me sick.
They
I
have
swear.
Pain. They have anguish. They have tears. So that will just constantly confuse me. But that was one of the theories.
Bless her hearts.
Another is, she just liked inflicting pain on people. She got a huge power trip from hurting and torturing people. I mean, that's very likely. I mean, just because of the fact that she just, with the torture devices, those didn't really seem like experiments. You know, when you've got devices designed to go around somebody's collar, and that just seems like a dick move is what that seems like. The third theory was almost like a cruel criminal investigation. Now, the reason I say that is right before this fire and all this was brought to light, down the river from there was an uprising on a plantation where some slaves kind of revolted and took over the plantation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people killed there was her mother.
Woman's mother? Yeah. Oh, so now they think she's just getting revenge.
So it's
them.
Possible she could be getting revenge or trying to see, because a lot of these slaves knew each other, talked to each other. She might have been trying to figure out who killed her mom and trying to get information from them, kind of like you would see, you know, in military torture
camps.
Okay, well,
a 12-year-old didn't do it, so what the hell?
No, understandable. No, and I'm not saying, I'm just saying here are all the theories behind what happened to some of them. She could have just been a bitch and still whipped slaves and stuff way too hard, but that didn't mean it was tied into the torture part that they saw. Could have been two different things. Now, it's possible that it goes back to 1771. Her uncle actually died. He was killed by two slaves. And in order to get a confession out of the two slaves, they were tortured. They got the confession and then they died a horrible death. So is it possible that she saw from her past, this is how slaves are treated?
Mm-hmm.
These two slaves were tortured. They got confessions.
So like she didn't know any better.
I'm not going to say she didn't, but it could tie in to with, okay, this is what I seen them do. My uncle died. Now my mom died. Maybe we'll do the same thing, or maybe that's how it's done. These are all stretches by any shape of the imagination. There is one other thing that this seems kind of odd to me, but we've done a show on Marie Laveau, the voodoo priestess, famous voodoo priestess. And the thing about Marie Laveau is she was actually a hairdresser also. She lived right up the road from Madame LaLaurie. There is a rumor that she used to go to Marie Laveau and get her hair done on occasion. And she was fascinated by the art of voodoo, and that those two became very close. And it's very possible that she was learning some of the tricks of the trade of voodoo from Marie Laveau, and part of that black magic voodoo era kind of took over with her, and she in turn started doing some experimenting of her own and mistreating slaves and all that. So who knows if any of that was true. We do know that she did have her hair done by Marie Laveau, and they did actually know each other.
Yeah.
So who knows at that point.
I don't know. They're all sickos is all I know. And this has got me in a very bad mood, this whole thing, this whole story.
So that is the basic story of Delphine LaLaurie. But it doesn't end there. That's just the story of what happened to her. What we're going to talk about next is the mansion that she lived in, what's happened to it since. So let's first, before we get into that, let's hear from our newest sponsor, Hillbilly Horror Shows.
Hot diggity dang, Hillbilly Horror Show's done gone global.
Land of Goshen.
Critics call Hillbilly Horror Show a barrel of good old American fun.
It sure is.
Catch the Hillbilly Horror Show on DVD and Roku, or just visit www.hillbillyhorrorshow.com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just talk about www, you go click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
And while you're there, don't forget to get your official Pyongyang Maine t-shirt and official Hillbilly Horror Show koozie. Get your gear today.
Make sure you check those guys out because they're very entertaining. We've had them on the show before, and if you remember the story, they actually gave us four DVDs to give out to you guys, and they're going to be giving us out some more things to give away in the future, some signed posters and some DVD combos. We'll give away one on Twitter, one on Facebook. So much like we did the headphones, we'll just assign a number and use a random number generator. That seems to work well.
Sounds good.
All right, so let's get on with this story. We're going to talk about the mansion now. So after the mob kind of ransacked this place, like we was telling you, there was someone who moved in for a very brief time, but basically this place was vacant for a few years. And, it, you know, with no remodeling going on and vagrants coming in, it just basically became a place of ruin. And it's fallen apart. Many people would claim that they hear screams coming from the balconies and coming from the inside of the house. Of course, up on the top was where the slave quarters was, the very last floor, more of the attic.
Oh, boy, if there's any place that would be doing that, that would be that house for sure.
Some people claim that they could see the apparitions of slaves walking around either on the outside of the balconies or just along the grounds of the property. Now, in one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting that people said, that they were saying that vagrants would actually go into the house to try to find a place to sleep and would never return.
Oh,
so I don't know how true that is, but there were sayings that said that. Now, there were some people that said that all these stories were made up just to keep the blacks of New Orleans from coming on that side of the street and walking past it. That they were made up stories just to try to, because a lot of the African Americans during that time in New Orleans were very spiritual and very superstitious, And so some people say that the stories were just made up just to keep them away from the property.
Oh.
But yeah. Who knows? 1837, the house was sold to a man who only stayed for 12 weeks. He said that he heard groans and strange noises coming from the house. He tried to rent out the rooms, but tenants would only stay for a couple nights. Following the Civil War, it was made into an integrated high school for girls in the lower district.
So, I didn't mean to interrupt you. So, the whole house didn't burn down?
No.
Just parts of it, and they just rebuilt?
Parts of it. It just saw damage to the inside, because she set the kitchen on fire. So.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're okay. So, they start this school in the lower, and it was actually a segregated school, so you had black kids and white kids going to school in the same, which for the, you know, this level of time, I mean, this was not something that was commonly done.
Yeah.
But from my understanding, this lasted about a year, and they came in there, and I don't know who, but it was part of the government or something. They came in there and decided that the black students needed to be out of the school, and then they separated it, and then the place closed down.
Sad, sad.
In 1882, an English teacher turned it into a music and dance school. A local paper posted a story saying that he was having some kind of inappropriate relationships with some of the students. And this was right before, like, they were getting ready to have this big, huge event. It's like the day before. And the students and the guests then shunned the place, and it closed down the very next day.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was abandoned until the 1890s. During that time, immigration was kind of booming in the New Orleans area. And it was a lot of Italians were moving to New Orleans from then. So landlords, they were snatching up property left and right, trying to turn them into cheap housing. Even at the cheap rates, nobody would stay there very long. So it was bought, remodeled, turned into like a nice little apartment complex. Nobody would stay.
So did these people that bought this place, did they realize what it was before?
Everybody
just knew.
Everybody from then till now knows exactly what that house
okay.
is. So there was all kinds of strange occurrences that happened during this little period of time. In one instance, a man said he got attacked by a naked man in chains.
Mm.
And let's remember that her slaves they found were all naked.
Yeah.
Other people say that they saw animals being butchered in the house.
Oh, my gosh.
Children claim that they were chased by a phantom with a whip.
Aw.
And then there were strange figures dressed in shrouds. One terrified mom said she woke up one day and she saw an elegant dressed woman bent over her baby in its crib, and it scared the death out of her. Of course, they had the standard groans and cries and the screams during the middle of the night. And that seemed to be the thing, is after midnight, there would be screams and stuff from the, you know, the slaves.
Yeah, I'm just shocked that anybody would even, knowing the story, would even think to stay at a place like that.
They also said that they saw some of the people that were like the first responders on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
They would see them still going like door to door, knocking.
To try to help people?
Knocking on a door, like doing what they did during that time.
Wow.
Because all these occurrences were this place, you know, like you said, who would want to stay there?
Right.
And because all this stuff happened, and it eventually was deserted again. It became a furniture store. This is kind of unique. The owner said that he had vandals that were sneaking into the store because he would find a very smelly brown liquid substance all over a lot of the furniture. So he decided that he was going to stake out the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he stayed outside with a shotgun at the only entrance. And nobody came, nobody went, but when he still went inside, there was still the brown liquid all over everything. No vandals were ever found. Now, after the furniture store, it became a saloon. They were trying to take advantage of the building's history, and they named it the Haunted Saloon. The owners would keep track of all the strange experiences that patrons had.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of their little niche. It was successful for a while, but eventually it just, you know, kind of became abandoned again. In the 1970s, it was turned into luxury apartments. So that's kind of where it stood for a while.
Mm-hmm.
In 1997, though, there was a new owner of these apartments. He had a local artist by the name of Ricardo Pustiano. He wanted him to paint a picture of Delphine LaLaurie that he wanted to hang inside the building.
What the heck, man?
Once the painting was hung in the building, rumors of darkness just kind of attached itself to the painting, and it started to make its way around town, and especially around the apartment complex. They say that the picture itself was haunted by Madame LaLaurie, that she was always a big fan of art. She had, and during her day, when she was there at the mansion, she would have had all kinds of super nice art, and people would have came from all over to look at it.
Well, so did the guy think if they painted that big portrait of her, it would bring people in because they would be fascinated to see what she looked like?
I have no idea why.
Because maybe, that, to me, is just really stupid.
Maybe he was moved to do it. I'm not sure. But reports of the picture was moving on its own.
Mm.
They said several witnesses had seen it shake so violently that it would fall off the wall. Residents claim that they felt depression anytime they got around it. Sometimes they would feel cold touches. They would hear voices, experience a strong smell of smoke from the damage from, you know, the building.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
One woman claims that the painting actually whispered to her, and then she started hearing footsteps following her around the apartment building.
Oh, God. That's crazy.
She claims that the spirit of Delphine LaLaurie was actually tormenting her. Now, obviously, the feeling of this painting was so dark that after a period of time, they actually returned it to the artist. The funny thing about that is the artist, he actually kind of became infatuated with this, and he actually painted several other pictures of Madame LaLaurie, just on his own. And he also said that this was the only one he knew to be haunted because nobody had ever had any claims about any of the other ones. Of course, this is the only one that actually was in her house.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it's not in that house, they probably wouldn't get anything out of it.
But the original is actually with a private collector now, and the owner refuses to disclose its location, and he won't discuss any activity that might or might not have happened with
it. Well, I'd say keep that damn thing as far away. I don't want to know where it is. Do you want to know where it is?
No, I absolutely do not want to know where it is.
Thank you for not telling us. We don't want to know.
But that's the actual story of Madame LaLaurie and her mansion.
God, that's a terrible story.
And it's owned by, actually, it's owned by some private people now. They don't want anybody coming in. They don't give any tours. They don't want people to see it. I think it's
one person. Why just burn it to the ground? Why?
Well, it's still a beautiful property just because bad stuff happened there.
Well, it's not a beautiful property anymore. All the stuff, that terrible stuff, it shouldn't even be on the face of the earth anymore.
And obviously, for those of you who watch American Horror Show, when you watch The Coven, Kathy Bates' character was actually based on Madame LaLaurie.
Yeah.
Because she actually, that was her name in the movie. That's who she was playing. But that was where all this came from. That came from a true life incident. So not everything you see on fictional TV is fiction.
Yeah. Well, no thank you. That biatch can keep burning.
Now, we have a couple of cool things. I've got another story we're going to tell you. It's a New Orleans-based story. But first, we actually have an interview. One of our good friends, Karen Wickham, she hosts a show called Stat. And I wanted to go ahead and do a little quick interview with her so she can tell you about her show. It's fantastic. It's moving up the iTunes charts. She actually is 10,000 downloads already, and she's only like 7 episodes in.
Well, good for her.
And, you know, it took us, for any comparison, it took us like 20 episodes to hit 10,000 downloads. So she's burning it up, and I'm excited to have her on here. Let's give a listen to Karen. All right, we are joined by Karen Wickham, and Karen hosts one of my new favorite podcasts out by the name of Stat. And Karen and I go back a little ways, but before she even started the podcast, we talked about what she would need to get set up, and we kind of would talk back and forth and have some good conversations about the podcasting industry. Lo and behold, she got into it, and she's got some really cool stories to tell, so I'm glad she did get into it. But Karen, you've got a background of doing some paranormal investigating as well as being a nurse. So you've got a unique take on some of these stories that I haven't heard out of any podcasters.
Yeah, I guess I've always had an interest or a curiosity in the paranormal. I had experiences since I was a young child. And then you take that with working in the hospital and being just naturally around places where there's death and dying. The two together sort of work hand in hand. So, you know, I really got more into starting to do paranormal investigating because of some of the experiences I was having in hospitals, and it just one fed off the other.
Well, let me ask you this, because now that you started your own show, it's a fascinating aspect that you look at different areas of, like, early days and psychiatry and psychology and some doctors, and give people what your input is of what you want your show to be and what you're trying to make it be down the road.
Wow. Really, I want to talk about a few things. First of all, it sort of started off in a way that I didn't realize it was going to go. I sort of jumped into more of a mental health aspect of things. And really got into talking about lobotomy and terrible treatments that were happening in the psychiatric and medicine in those days and continuing forward. That being said, I want to do things that are a little bit more serious and give information, but I also want to do things that are a little bit more lighter, a little bit more fun, talking about some of the crazy things that take place in the ER and just wild and crazy treatments that go on around the world, and maybe some true crime as well.
What was the doctor with the lobotomies? What was his name?
Dr. Walter Freeman.
You?
I don't call him doctor. I usually just say Walter Freeman.
I could definitely understand that.
What's that?
I said I could definitely understand that. Why don't you talk a little bit about him? Because I know you did several episodes. The first two, three, four episodes were based on him and his life. Give the people out there who haven't heard your show a little synopsis of this gentleman and why you don't like him.
Well, when I first decided to what my first few episodes were going to be, I really didn't think that I would be doing a four-part series on Walter Freeman. The fact is, he is such a horrible human being that I just kept finding one thing after another. I kept researching and more came up. Personally, I think this guy can go down in history as one of America's first serial killers. Because the thing that he did to people, he would torture them. So many people died at his hand. He was just a terrible, terrible man. He came up with this procedure, the lobotomy, but he was doing it for fame and fortune, and he was always trying to cut corners, do things cheaper, and he didn't care about people at all. He was just looking out for himself.
Yeah, he was extremely cocky. I know he drove around in a vehicle that he jokingly called the lobotomy bill.
Oh, yeah, exactly. He actually would combine his family vacations with what he called headhunting excursions. And his headhunting excursions were to go around in his lobotomobile. He'd drop his kids off somewhere for a couple days, and he'd go from hospital to hospital performing surgeries en masse. He called himself the Henry Ford of lobotomy.
Yeah, because I think I read somewhere at one point in time, and I might have even heard on your show, but I know he was charging like $100 a lobotomy. So he would just go places and just do masses of them at a time, make his money, and just head out to the next stop.
That's pretty much it. And he would invite anybody to come in and check them out. And the thing he would do is he would do it with such a flourish, almost like a sideshow circus act. And so many, in fact, some nurses actually quit nursing afterwards because they just couldn't believe things were going in this direction. But he would, with the ice pick lobotomy or transorbital lobotomy, he put in two ice pick-like instruments, and you're supposed to just do one at a time if you're going to do it at all, but he would do two at a time, and he would pose for the camera, and he would say all these horrible things and have photographers in. Anybody who wanted to see it, he'd just invite them in and screw the, the confidentiality of the patient and their, in the respect they deserved.
So for those of you listening to this and you think that's interesting, that's basically a couple of minutes on this gentleman. You know, Karen's got, what, four shows, did you say, on his whole life, and she breaks down actual patients and the whole scenario with their family, and it's really fascinating. It's amazing how much information you were able to dig up on this guy.
Yeah, I just, once I got into it, I just kept reading and researching. I wanted to make sure I had, like, the most accurate information possible. And he showed signs of being a little sociopath from a very young age, and he just got worse and worse and worse until the end of his career.
Let me ask you this, Karen. As far as your show goes, what has been the biggest challenge so far that you've come across from what you thought it was going to be doing a show, and what has it become? Because I know you definitely had some success right out of the gate that a lot of shows don't have. Any surprises along the way? Anything more difficult than you thought it would be?
Well, first of all, I do want to thank you, because I don't know where I would have started unless you sort of gave me some base, some ground to work from. That really made my life so much easier, because I wouldn't have known where to begin. But I think the biggest thing for me has been, well, part of it is technical, because I've learned this stuff from scratch. So just understanding how to do all the technical parts of it. I actually love editing, which sounds crazy, but to me it's like magic. You can just like take in and put out stuff. But I think mostly it's the storytelling. You know, I'm not a writer. I'm not a creative person. So it's really learning how to take a story and all the information and give it as best as you can.
What about your past experiences? How has your past experiences of being a nurse or being a paranormal investigator helped you with this project?
Well, I think just because I have the basic knowledge, the nursing knowledge, so that when I delve into these things, I already kind of know what it's about, and it helps me fine-tune. It's just easier for me to pick up and the information that I'm giving. And one thing I have to be really aware of is I can't help but throw out all these like technical terms, and my son would always give me heck saying, "Mom, you can't just say stuff like that." I guess all the experience that I've had working in the hospital has made it easy for me to decide on what types of cases to work on and helps fine-tune the direction I'm taking. Being a paranormal investigator as well has helped me, well, I guess I see things from a different perspective, having interest in both in the hospital, because I've had some pretty interesting experience that I believe are paranormal. So between the two, they've sort of fallen into place together a bit.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of your paranormal experiences in the hospital. Do you find that some parts of the hospital are more susceptible to paranormal activity than others, like, say, the morgue, or are the rooms, because people die in the emergency rooms and stuff, are they all pretty much the same, or do you think there is a difference?
I definitely think there is a difference. I mean, I think some people would say or think, well, for sure the morgue, you know, that's where it sounds the creepiest. But, you know, if you think about all the death and dying that takes place, yeah, I mean, it's just it's a hotbed for paranormal activity. And this one particular hospital I worked in, it was the oldest part of the hospital. And, you know, I would feel in taking people down, it's usually a very, or at least where I worked, it was a very dark and dingy and quiet and echoey place. And it would be me or one other person, and you would feel a cool breeze. You would feel an unsettling feeling. And there's at least one time where I would see my breath, and it, you know, I just knew something was around me. Just get that feeling. Different parts in the hospital where there is concentrated death and dying. There was one particular room in a hospital that I worked at where if someone were to pass, we would have them stay in that room so family could visit a bit longer. And I actually had an experience in that room one night. We're always busy in the emerge. It's always out of control. But you get one of those instances where it's not too bad. In fact, it feels kind of eerie to us. You can't make us happy. It's either busy, a little bit quiet, and then it freaks us out. But anyway, I had a couple minutes, 20 minutes or so, to have a lie down. In this room, I decided to just rest my head for, you know, 15, 20 minutes. So I went into the room, and I was so tired. I had my stethoscope and all my change and pens and scissors and stuff in my pocket. I lie down and I felt the room go really cold. And this was not a chilly room. And there was just enough of a window so that you can see a bit while you're in the room. So the room went cool. I could see my breath a bit. And I felt a presence. And it wasn't scary, though it was startling. And I felt like someone had sat on the bed beside me. In fact, I saw a little, like, bum imprint on the bed. So I kind of jumped up quick and asked, who's there? What's going on? And, well, I didn't get a response, but the feeling, the coolness and all that sort of went away. I packed up myself pretty quick and went out to the nurse's station with, like, my eyes bulging out of my head. And my coworkers asked me what was going on, and I told them what happened. And they've had their own kind of experience back in that room, and it kind of led to more conversations about all of our experiences. It was one of those things that you don't really talk about much, but then when it came up, we all had stories to tell about different things that had happened.
So did you have any other experiences, like, in the morgue area?
It's in the morgue for sure. I mean,
it almost seems like what you were saying, the morgue almost seems like the least likely place, because
I think a lot of people think it's the least likely place, but it can be very active feeling down there. But I think it has a lot to do with the fact that it's often in the oldest part of the building as well. So the older the building, the more imprinting I feel, the more activity. But definitely the hallways leading up to it and around it, this, the whole area, sometimes you just feel like you're being watched. Sometimes you hear steps. Elevator doors were open and closed. There's one particular area in this one hospital I worked in where we called it, like, it was like the elevator ghost, where, this is going to sound crazy, but you would go to the elevator and you know what floor you would want to go on, and the door would open for you, you'd step on it, and it would take you to that floor. And it was uncanny, you know, and if you're by yourself, you think, oh my God, am I going crazy? What's happening? But, you know, so those sort of things started to happen regularly that, you know, you just sort of took it on. It was just, that's what happened in that part of the hospital.
So let's switch gears a little bit. You've been a paranormal investigator. You're from Canada, or at least you live in Canada. I don't know if you're from Canada, but you live in Canada. And I know the first time that we ever talked, it was because we did a story on a lighthouse up in Canada. And you said it was basically in your backyard and you were unaware of it. What's the coolest place you've ever done an investigation at?
Well, there is this, there's a place up in Scugog. I live in Toronto. And let's say about an hour east of Toronto, there is a little town, you know, where they bring they make it like to a little village. They've brought in different houses and things like that. And it was settled on old native burial ground. And we did a really intense investigation there one night. And the experience was unbelievable. There was like a black mist that went on. There was movement and walking throughout the room. I've got some pretty incredible pictures. You know, people say orbs, you know, they're not really anything. But in this case, it was pretty evident what was going on. And I got quite a bit of EVP and film work from it. And it was pretty amazing. The one place was an old schoolhouse that had burned down. And unfortunately, many children had died in that, and they built up on the foundation, and it was a hotbed. We would play a certain song, and we would have our cameras looking in there, and there would be orbs that would be moving to the beat of the music or to the sound of the music. I don't know, it's a song called Beautiful Dreamer. It's an older song, and it's kind of creepy, but yeah, so that was pretty amazing.
It's not really as creepy as the fact that you just said a school that burned down was a hotbed.
Oh, man. I didn't even... Oh, I'm so embarrassed. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Sorry.
Yeah, if anybody knows about Freudian slips, it's you.
Yeah, and I just made a big one. I didn't even need it. But yeah, that was a. And then there's also a hospital out there that was called. It was a very well-known psychiatric hospital, and some pretty bad stuff went on. It was during the times where Walter Freeman was in his heyday, and that hospital was eventually torn down, and the activity that went down there was absolutely crazy. Well, I shouldn't say that, but
once again,
doing it again, Jerry. But yeah, I did some investigation around there, and the EMF meters were just, and the EVPs were, it was just unbelievable. And still in that area, if you go there, it's an empty lot now, but there's still a lot that goes on. And the people in the neighborhood, they've had quite a few people move out in that neighborhood because of the activity.
Wow. That's you definitely had your share of experiences, and I think that's why it was really cool to bring you on and let you talk about them. Why don't you talk about how the people can get in contact with you and listen to your show?
Oh, okay. Well, my show, STAT, Shocking Traumas and Treatments. I have a Facebook discussion page that's where you can find it as. On Twitter, it's @STAT_tales. I have a website that is StatTales, so STATTALES.ca. And yeah, those are the places where you can find me.
It's your show's available on every platform, so you can find it on basically iTunes and Google Play and all that. So if you got a podcast app, just put in STAT and you'll be able to find it. And I think you'll enjoy the show. Like I said, you just finished. What was your last episode? How many have you got now?
I have done 7 episodes, and I was actually editing one that I'm hoping to have out tomorrow. It sort of goes hand in hand with the Walter Freeman. I'm talking about a gentleman who was lobotomized at 12 years old.
Wow. It's like I said, it's fascinating. Once you guys start listening to this, there's really nothing else like it out there. It's not, it just touches on subjects that nobody talks about. So I think you'll get a big kick out of it. And once you download it, like I said, you only got 7 episodes right now, so it'll be pretty easy to binge listen and catch up.
Thank you so much.
Karen, thanks for coming on the show. We greatly appreciate it. You're always going to be a friend of the show.
And we're glad. Thank you so much, Jerry. And Tracy, it's an honor to be on. I appreciate everything you've done for me. I think you really were a big part of me just doing this.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you so much.
Absolutely. And anytime you've got something you need to tell everybody and you want to come on the show, because I know you got a bunch of other cool stories. You've already been on one of our listeners' episodes telling some stories. So anytime you want to share some more of your stories that you're not going to use on your own show, feel free to give us a call. We'll put you back on.
Thank you so much.
All right, babe. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Have a good night.
Bye.
She really does have a fun show, so you guys need to check her out. And she's gaining in popularity, so I think she's going to be one of the next huge podcasts out there when
definitely.
It's all said and done.
Good for her.
Now, we got a couple of events to tell you guys about. I'm super excited. First and foremost, this is just still getting some bugs worked out of it, but just so everybody knows who's not on our Facebook page, April 28th, Louisville, Kentucky, we're going to have an event. It's going to be a collaboration between Tracy and I, Mike Brown from Pleasing Terrors, and Diane and Denise from History Goes Bump. What we're going to do is we're going to have all of us are going to get together in Louisville, Kentucky. We're going to go to a little restaurant or a meeting room, still working that part of it out, but we're going to sit down and all do a live show for you guys. And then we're going to turn around and have like a question and answer period, a meet and greet. We are going to leave from that venue and go to Waverly Hills Sanatorium.
Ooh.
Where we will be given a private tour for us and 55 of you lucky guys.
Yeah.
So as it gets closer, we will tell you about this, but this is going to be really affordable, especially if you live in the area. This is going to be like $40 is going to get you the tour and the private show. So this is going to be a really cool thing. We're excited about it. We love the fact of teaming up with Pleas and Terrors, and you know, Diane and our friends from History Goes Bump. This is going to be a really fun night, and we're excited about it.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm kind of scared too, so we'll see how that goes.
All right, and then, well, not really then, because it's before that.
Yeah.
But it's getting really close, so we want to try to remember to remind everybody, because I've not done a very good job of doing that thus far. We are going to be at Scarefest with Robert Englund and a host of 1,000 other people. Okay, it's not really 1,000. No. I've exaggerated just to try to inflate sales. But we're going to be there. Robert Englund, a bunch of famous people, Kane Hodder, you name them from the horror movies, they're going to be there. It's going to be a really fun event. That's in Lexington, Kentucky, September 29th, 30th, and October 1st. It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the end of this month. You guys need to definitely come check us out there, because it is going to be a lot of fun.
Who's calling?
It's that Bo from Hillbilly Horror Show.
What does he want?
He thinks that somehow or another, because the name of our shows are very similar, that somehow or another we've got to be related.
Oh, dang. That, okay.
Let me see what he wants. Hey, Bo, what's going on?
Hey, what do you know, RJ, Bo?
Hey,
you got to be one of my brother cousins, I'm convinced.
Well, I mean, it's kind of bad timing, Bo. We're kind of in the middle of recording this episode on Madame LaLaurie in New Orleans.
Oh, man. Oh, I love New Orleans, man. I love New Orleans. You know, I tell you right now, I took Cephas down there one time, and we walked down that street of bourbon. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I'm telling you, you know, normally that boy, he's a stuttering and a mumbling about 100 miles an hour, and then I explain to him what the XXX on all them signs down there meant, and boy, you ain't never seen a grown man shut up and drool so damn fast in your life. And, you know, but of course I can't take him in them places, you know, because I mean, it's bad enough trying to keep him out of the bathroom when Lulu's taking a shower. So, you know, I told him, you know, hey, why don't you go on down the street there and stare at some horses' asses? And I was talking about the funny mirrors down there outside of one of them shops. Man, that boy run up a tab with them horse and carriage people. I swear, I don't think we was going to get out that place with our skin. I mean, he must have run it up for $150.
He ran a $150 tab on horses?
Yeah, man, because I told him to stare at a horse's ass, and he thought I meant go ride the carriages. And he just kept going around and around, and it was like $25 a pop before I finally got him off there.
Well, that'll teach him.
I'm telling you, man, that boy, he just ain't got the damn scent.
Well, what do you
want? So, y'all going to New Orleans?
No, we're just talking about New Orleans. We may end up going.
I was gonna tell you down there at the Hustler Club, I still owe Cherry $20. I was gonna give that to you, give to her.
Well, we can see what's going on. We may be going down there next August. You got any tips for fun stuff to do down there besides Cherry?
Well, take a lot of extra beer money, because I'm telling you right now, it ain't cheap down there. I'm not kidding you. I mean, you know, what I done did is I stopped before I come over the big fridge there, and I buy like a couple of cases, and then I just roll like a suitcase, because don't nobody care if you roll a suitcase. Now, you roll a cooler, they're going to have a problem. But I roll a suitcase, but I pack that sucker full of like, you know, like trash bags full of ice, and keep all my beer in there. And then when I take one of the beers out, people think I just bought it, and they think I'm trying to find my hotel, man. You'd be amazed how nice some people are. They'll come up there and they'll, what hotel are you staying at? And I'll be like, hell, I don't know. I can't remember what it's called. And they say, well, there's a bunch of them down through here. You just keep walking around, you'll spot it. And that way I can drink beer all night, and it don't cost me but like a third of what they charge.
So when you go down there, do you take Lulu usually?
Man, I'm telling you, that's the only way we can make money in New Orleans. I mean, take her down there, and we just go from one club to the next. I mean, we pay for the whole trip, you know. I mean, now, granted, she wasn't too particularly happy about staying topless most of the time, but, you know, I told her, I said, this is family. You got to do for your family. I mean, but then she got down there and started arguing with this fella because, I mean, he... he was quite rude. He kept saying stuff about his gumbo was better. And I don't know, Seats thought I had a stick of Wrigley's or something, but, you know, I tried to explain to him gumbo's like a stew. It doesn't have nothing to do with me. But he didn't, you know, he don't get it. But he was telling her that his seafood gumbo was better than her possum gumbo. And I'm telling you right now, that damn near is fighting waters where we're from. And that boy, that girl, Lord, she almost got us kicked out the whole state.
Well, my question is, how do you make money down there with topless? Because people just throw beads, right?
Have you seen Lulu?
I have. I just didn't know how you were able to turn beads into money.
Well, no, I mean, she don't do nothing for free. Let me just go ahead and tell you. I mean, you know. But, yeah, all them clubs with the XXX out there, you know, we just kind of moved her from one to the next. People didn't know no different. They thought she was just one of the dancers. So, you know, she'd slip back there, give them a quick dance, get the money, and say, come on, let's go. We'd hustle on down to the next one. It worked out great, I'm telling you.
Well, Bo, I appreciate you calling.
You never know. I mean, you know, throw them heels on Cephas. Hell, he'd probably make money. Somebody'd be drunk enough to get a dance from him.
Well, if it's going to happen anywhere, it'd be right there in Mardi Gras town.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't do that Mardi Gras. Them people with the mask kind of weird me out.
Yeah, I don't mind the mask so much because, trust me, there's been a couple of young ladies I've taken home. I wish they had a mask on the next morning when I woke up.
Oh, brother, I know exactly what you mean there. I mean, you know, just something about when you wake up, you're trying to come to and get your orientation and whatnot, and then a midget comes walking across the room, and you just wonder what in the hell happened.
I think they prefer to be called something other than midgets these days.
Oh, that's right. They dwarves, thanks to that throne show. They dwarves now.
Bo, I appreciate you calling, man. I got to get back to recording, though.
Oh, y'all have fun now, and don't forget, man. Now, don't be eating them raw oysters down there. I'm telling you right now, good Lord. Man, just too much hot sauce. Lord, have mercy, about burning the hotel room down. Y'all have a good one now.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Sorry about that, guys. Let's get back to the stories we were going to tell you before we were so rudely interrupted.
Seriously.
Okay, so this next story I thought was kind of cool. It's one I hadn't heard before, and I ran across it by accident. But I wanted to find another story that was dealing with, obviously, New Orleans, because I thought it would be cool if we're going to go ahead and just do a theme for the whole night. And we hadn't done that really with New Orleans. So let's go ahead and tell you about the Delta Queen. The Delta Queen is a riverboat. Now, it's supposedly haunted, but I have to tell you some backstory before we can really tell you about the Delta Queen and how it became haunted. So let's go a little bit back in time. From 1811 to the 1900, steamboats were the ships that powered pretty much industry throughout the South. They developed growth, they developed everything that industry needed because the rivers were how everything got from point A to point B. So they, you know, did pretty good, but about the end of the 19th century, they pretty much all vanished because the railroads came in.
And took over.
So there really wasn't no point in having the boats when you got railroads that were more efficient. So Robert Greene, though, he was more or less determined that he wasn't going to let it die. He started a company named Delta Queen Steamboat Company, and he married a young lady from Indiana by the name of Mary Becker. In 1895, Mary became one of the very few women that actually was licensed to captain the steamboat.
Cool.
Mr. Greene died in 1927, and he obviously left the company to Mary and their two children. Captain Chris, who was one of his children, he actually died at the age of 43.
Oh, that's so young. Why?
I don't know. Didn't look that part up. I think his heart stopped.
Really?
Tracy is flashing me.
Well, my boobs are sweating. Okay, sweaty boobs.
I'm supposed to focus on a show when you're flashing me boobs.
Sorry, I can't.
See, I knew as soon as we did a damn story on New Orleans.
Oh, and she give me the beads. Give me the beads. Sorry, guys. It's just like really hot in here for some reason.
No, you would be sorry if it was video. Yeah. We're okay with audio. Huh. Anyway, the other son, Captain Tom.
You are so mean.
I am not mean.
That is, was mean.
I was just... Okay, it was me.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead with your story.
Okay, so Captain Tom, who was the other son, he vowed that he wanted to build the greatest steamboat ever. The Delta Queen was then actually added to their list of boats, but it was not something they built. It was actually built in 1927, and it was part of the military. It was a dingy color gray.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they bought it. They did $750,000 worth of renovations to it, mm-hmm. and then they painted it some cool-ass, you know, white and red, like you typically see steamboat colors. June 30th, 1948, the Delta Queen made its maiden voyage with Mary as the steamboat captain.
Well, how in the hell old was she?
She wasn't that old. It was 1948, and I mean, so she was, she'd been a captain for about 50 years. She was in her 70s, I guess.
Oh. Seems like she'd be way older than that, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. So she goes ahead, and she's at the helm. She had a special room at the boat, and down in the bottom cabin that she actually, that was her home. Unfortunately, Mary died a year later. So.
Aww.
After being a river boat captain for 50 years, it was kind of fitting that
she
would still be captain in a river boat. Many people say, though, that she never left the boat. Not because there's a skeleton or nothing there. It's just because other things. In 1982, First Mate Mike Williams was asleep in his bunk, and he was kind of all alone in the thing. It was during a winter layover.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the only one in the boat just making sure, like playing caretaker. He said about 1:30 in the morning, he felt someone go psst into his ear. And he kind of dismissed it because, you know, he was sleeping. He thought he was dreaming. A few minutes later, he heard the same thing. Psst. And he could, said he could feel the hot air on his neck and everything. So he jumped up out of bed. And obviously, he's like, you know, I was in the middle of a sleep. You know, I don't know if I, you know, actually heard anything or not. He was scared. So he thought, well, maybe somebody's gotten in here.
Yeah.
So he decides he's going to go check it out.
From the middle of the ocean.
Well, no, it's not floating. It's tied up somewhere. Have you ever seen the Belle of Louisville? How it's like just docked
when
it's not being used. Anyway, so they go to the bottom of the stairs, and he hears a door slam. So it startled him, obviously, because, you know.
Yeah, because he thinks that's it.
Right. And he went down the steps to the engine room, and he could hear water gurgling. He claims that when he got down there and took a look around, that there was this large intake pipe that would normally, it would take water from the river,
mm-hmm.
and it would circulate it around for the boiler when it was in operation. But it shouldn't be any real no need to be using it right this second. But there was a huge hole in it that had rusted, and water was pouring in to the point almost like a fire hose.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah, so water was pouring into the hull of the boat, and he made a really quick repair on it, but he called his boss and had somebody come out, and they made a permanent repair. But he said that he is 100% convinced that had he not been awakened by whatever this, well, I don't know if that's right or not.
So you're saying that...
I'm saying it's awoken.
Okay, no. But you're saying, he's saying that if he hadn't heard that, oh, I can't do it. But anyway, if that hadn't woken him up, he would have drowned it probably.
I don't know that he would have drowned it, but the boat would have definitely sank.
Well, did I miss something? Where's his kids at? Why didn't they have the boat? Why weren't they taking over the boat?
Well, they may have. This guy, this is 30 years later from the time that she died to when this happened. Because that happened in like 1948, now it's like 1982.
Okay.
So 35 years later, whatever the case is. We both know I'm not good with math on the air.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was his thought. But that wasn't his only occurrence of actually running into who he believes was Mrs. Green.
Mm-hmm.
On another occasion, Mike received a call from a young lady by the name of Myra Fruge.
Mm-hmm.
She had just started working on the ship. She was working in the purser's office. She calls him up, and she said she got a call from an elderly lady in a cabin area that she complained that she was cold and wasn't feeling well. She wanted to know if someone could come down and take a look at her. So she called Mike. Mike headed down there, and he went to the room that she told him. He knocked on the door, but nobody answered. So he opened the door with his passkey. He found nobody in the room. And matter of fact, it wasn't even occupied.
Oh, wow.
So he thought, okay, I must have just went to the wrong cabin, yeah. And I want to make sure. So he went to the purser's office because he was close. And he found this Myra Fruge in there, and she was visibly shaking. And she said, something funny's going on. And he said, well, why is that? And she said, I just had this strange feeling that somebody was watching me. And I turned and looked out the window, and there was this old lady just looking at me in the window. So she was kind of scared, and it was time for her to get off. So he was walking her to her room because she's got a room there on the boat. As they walked past, a picture of Mrs. Green on the wall. And she says, that's her. And Mike said, that's who? And she said, that's the lady I saw. He said, that can't be the lady you saw because she's been dead for like 40 years. And she's like, no, I promise you that is who I saw. Now, the funny coincidence in all this, I guess you could say, is Mike and Myra eventually got married.
Aww.
And he likes to tell people that they were actually introduced by Mary Green.
Aww. Now, that's sweet.
Yeah.
I love stories like that.
So here's some other occurrences on the ship. Mary Richardson, she was a musician. She was staying there for a little bit. She's now actually a historian for the boat. She was so fascinated by what happened during her time on there.
Uh-huh.
But she was just on there as a musician. She saw Mary on several different occasions. She had a room, and she would, like, middle of the night, she would just read.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she could swear somebody would just pass her, like, out of the corner of her eye. And this happened three nights in a row. So she went in and told the ship's cruise director what was going on. And he said, well, describe her to me. So she described her. So then he showed her a picture. And the lady was like, you know, Mary was like, that's who I saw. That's definitely who I saw. So she described her perfectly.
Yeah.
Without seeing a picture of her.
Oh.
Or knowing who she was. And she didn't know anything about this boat to know any history of it.
Wow. Good. That's so cool.
There was also another entertainer by the name of Phyllis Dale. Now, she actually was on the boat to be entertainment. So this was her deal. She left one night to use the bathroom, and she said she saw a lady in a long green velvet robe walking down the hall. And she said she was walking by her because she just looked like she was out of place. She said that the lady made a corner, a turn down the hall, and then she'd made the corner turn down the hall, but when she turned, there was no sight of the lady. She was completely gone. Just disappeared. So she asked the captain, and he informed her that that was Mary Green. And, you know, now you would think that some people would be scared to be on the boat or scared of to work there. But the reality of it is they all say they feel comforted by the fact that they're seeing her. Because every time that they've seen her, it's always been a pleasant experience. Mm-hmm. Or you've had the experience of her practically saving the boat. So they feel like that she's constantly watching over this boat to protect it and make sure nothing happens.
That's very nice. I wonder why her husband didn't come back and join her.
I don't know. Maybe she didn't really like him.
Maybe not. I think it's a very cool story. I like it.
Anyways, guys, that is episode 56.
56.
Almost. Almost. Because we do have a joke of the day. I saved this for the very last. And
it's not me, is it?
No, it's not you.
Okay.
The joke of the day, it may piss some people off, but I thought it was funny. So,
oh, Lord. I don't know what this joke is,
I will give you a disclaimer that no ill feelings or any type of offensiveness. Is that a word? Offensiveness?
I don't know.
But it's not meant to offend anybody.
You never know what's going to come out of his mouth. I'm just warning you.
Well, anyways, keep in mind this joke is brought to you by Hillbilly Horror Show. Go check them out, guys. They really are good. They're on iTunes. They're on Voodoo. They're on Google Play, Amazon, Instant Video, YouTube. Roku. They got their own Roku channel, so if you got Roku, check them out. They're very fun, and we really thank them for coming on to contribute to our show. All right. We're going to end on this joke. So it takes place in a nursing home. You've got an elderly man and an elderly woman. They have the same routine every day. They lay in the bed, completely naked, and the woman holds on to the man's penis. This goes on for a couple of years. Well, one day, the old woman, she goes to go into the gentleman's room, and she hears something. And she's startled by the fact that she hears another woman. So she bursts into the room and she looks at the guy and she says, "I cannot believe you've done this to me. I mean, she's not prettier than I am. She's not younger than I am. What in the world does she possibly have that I don't?" And the old man looked at her and said, "Parkinson's." Thank you, guys. We're out of here.
Oh, my God.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.